Welcome to Evolutions Per Minute. I'm your host, Dan Seif, and this is the podcast that explores the connection between hip-hop and jazz. These two art forms, created by Black American artists, share a lot of the same DNA, but the stories of how they're connected haven't really been told. So many hip-hop songs sample jazz records, and in most cases, the jazz and hip-hop artists have never even met. Each episode of Evolutions Per Minute, I will bring together these jazz and hip-hop artists for the very first time to talk about these two styles and learn about how these genres are related. This is Evolutions Per Minute. Welcome to Episode 1. This episode, I'm going to be bringing together for the very first time jazz bass player Ron Carter with hip-hop group Black Sheep to talk about Black Sheep's The Choice Is Yours, which samples Ron Carter's bass playing on Impressions by McCoy Tyner.
You know, I've been record shopping with Long and on my own over the years. And, you know, like, we looked at you dudes like, man, we studied you guys. Like, and you guys are, man, like, you guys are just beyond genius, man. I totally am grateful to be here with you.
Yeah, that's the sound of being stunned. Don't worry about it.
So before I talk to my guests on today's episode, I just want to set the stage a little bit. The Choice Is Yours by Black Sheep was released in 1993, and it is a foundational song in hip-hop. When it was released, it was everywhere in the air, and it had this section that everybody knows.
Engine number 9 on the New York Transit line. If my train goes off the track, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up.
And for any hip-hop fan, that is like an iconic line. If you hear that, you know the rest of the song. But the most identifiable part of the song is this bass part.
Here they come, yo. Here they come. Here they come, yo. Here they come.
So I knew this song for years before I knew who played the bass part. For whatever reason, I just never found that out. I've studied bass with Ron Carter for a long time, for years, and he is the most recorded living bassist. He's on something like 2,000 records. He played with Miles Davis and a million other people inside and outside of jazz, and that bass line is Ron Carter from this record. At about 2 minutes and 50 seconds, the piano player and drummer lay out, and this happens. So that recording is called Impressions by McCoy Tyner, and it was recorded in 1975. The album has McCoy Tyner on piano and Elvin Jones on drums, and they were one half of the John Coltrane Quartet, and then Ron Carter is on bass on the album. The song, Impressions, is a composition by John Coltrane that he created by mashing up the chords of the Miles Davis song, So What? And the melody of a classical piece called Pavane by Morton Gould. So that Miles Davis recording that I just played with So What is also Ron Carter on there. So he would have played that song So What hundreds of times live, and it's the same chords to Impressions, which is what the Black Sheep Choice Is Yours sample comes from. So that's a little background of both songs. And now I want to welcome my guests, Ron Carter and Mr. Long and Drez of Black Sheep. And my first question for Mr. Carter is, what do you remember about the recording of Impressions?
As a general rule, and I'm speaking for me, I don't know how any of you guys make work, but I never hear the finished product. Or I seldom hear the finished product until a lot of time has passed from that session until it's in the street. Generally, as a sideman, I have no input to once the tape is stopped and my check it clears, basically, I'm kind of out of the picture. I'm not involved in the mixing. I'm not involved in the editing. I'm not involved in the song selection. I'm not involved in the best version of that song. I'm not involved in the edits. My job is done when I leave the studio. I have no input to the cover. Seldom do I do a line. I have no input. I haven't explained that real world action in my sphere. I never know when the record's coming out. And I only know when someone calls it to my specific attention. And I do remember the session. And a couple of things I remember when it finally got released to the public as I understood it. And I was questioned about that record. I told those guys who asked me, that record was made in 1975, you just told me. I've been playing this tune with Miles Davis on the title of So What for over almost 10 years. For 5 years with Herbie, Tony, Wayne, and Miles. In that 5 years of playing Miles's version of Impressions or McCoy's version of So What, I've learned how to play that fucking song, guys. I'm not just walking in there. I'm not walking in there. I'm not sight reading. Not that tune. I mean, I've been playing that tune faster than that for longer, for 5 years. So when I saw that material called Impressions, which I hadn't seen Trains Band or didn't know their library, other than My Favorite Things, which was a big thing at the time, I said, well, I know that song, man. Impressions, I don't know, but how's the melody go? Da, da, da. Wait a minute, man. I know that song. Is that the same song, man? And then the joke in the room broke up, so everyone understood where we were coming from. So that's the opening to this. Your question about that record. Right. It was, for me, generally, it's just another date playing with guys who I was about to play with for the first time, clearly two musicians who I knew, musicians whose judgment I trusted, and I hoped that they would trust my choice of notes and my kind of rhythm and my ability to sound like I belong in that band. And I think I did a pretty good job of impersonating a member of that band, you know?
And with them being two of the four members of the John Coltrane Quartet, what did that mean to you going into the session? Did that mean something to you going into the session?
I'm playing with two of the top shelf guys.
Okay.
You know? I'm trying to avoid the word fearless because I think music doesn't have that word anymore in its vocabulary, you know? Mm. I just thought that I was there because they thought I could do the job. And my job is to prove them correctly that they made the correct choice.
Okay.
And when I leave, the guy's got to say, when are you coming back? Then I've done my job.
Right, right. Okay.
As I hear Impressions played back, that was the kind of solo that I played that you wouldn't hear on records up until that point. I mean, a walking bass solo was that. It was doing like this until somebody took it out or said, enough. You know? I just thought that it was time with Elvin playing really ferociously and McCoy playing what he played. I thought the tune needed something else. And I thought that the only way they compete in the positive sense with that dynamic coming from both of those guys was to play what I'm hearing. And I'm hearing a different set of notes to match those changes. And I'm hearing a different beat. Well, since I got it and they're watching, they're doing like this, and I'm on my own, you guys got a lot of fucking nerve, man. Here it comes. Yeah. McCoy's doing like this at the piano, and Elvin's fixing the snare. Whatever drummers do when they watch on the bass solo, that's anything short of talking during the bass solo, they're involved. And that's okay. They trust me to do it. Here's what I got for today. This is my menu for Impressions. Mm-hmm. And it's for sale, not at scale prices.
How common was it at the time for a bass player to take a solo where everybody else dropped out and then to not continue the tempo of the piece and just kind of go in their own direction the way
that never happened before then?
Really?
No.
Wow. So that was a first.
I think Max Roach started the band laying out for a bass solo back in the early 50s, and he had the bebop band with Clifford Brown and Harold Land and George Morrow. Whenever there was a solo in that band, Max hit the snare drum. Bap! And he'd do like this, or he'd fix the snare drum, or fix his nice tie, and bass player was on his own, you know? Until Max decided enough, and he'd take it out, you know? But up to that point, the answer is no one had done that before on record.
Wow, okay. So just what you did on that record is historic, just as a starting point.
Okay. If you say so.
Thank you. before we move on to the Black Sheep song, is there anything else you want to add about that recording and your performance?
No, I'm stuck with it. Whatever it is, it is.
Okay. So Black Sheep, The Choice Is Yours Revisited is a remix of the original version.
Who's the black sheep? What's the black sheep? No, not who I am or when I'm coming, so you sleep. Wasn't in my room or wasn't in your sphere. No, not who I was, but listen here.
This question is for Mr. Long. How did there come to be a second version, and how was the song created?
So between the two versions, the first version was done a year earlier, and the album was held up because of sample clearance. So what I decided to do is to try to keep up with the times of what was going on, keep up with my brothers Like a Tribe Called Quest, with De La Soul, and how their music was evolving. And a year goes pretty quickly, but a lot can change in 1 year. So what I started to do was say, okay, I want to start remixing this stuff. I'll come with some new sounding, right now sounding beats. So that's when I went back in, and that particular song was done for Chi Ali, that beat. I had that beat on the chopping block and I was going to give it to Chi Ali. But when I was in remixing mode, I was like, no, let me grab this back. I like it a lot. I'm going to keep it for Black Sheep, you know, and I played it for Drez. I remember he liked it. So I was like, okay, so it's, or either he came in the room and was like, what the hell is that? And we're keeping it, or something like that.
that was probably more like
it. I think it went something like that. So either way, we kept it. And just putting that piece together, hearing the bass solos, it fit perfectly with the beat drum that I had playing at the time. So what I was doing, I was grabbing a drum solo. I'll grab guitar solos, I'll grab bass solos, and I'll put it all back together and see what it sounds like. And it just happened to fit.
Who's the black sheep? What's the black sheep? No, not who I am or when I'm coming, so you sleep.
You know, to me, it sounds great. I don't know anything about being a musician. I don't play. I do it from an aspect of a DJ. I just match the tempo. So rest in peace to my engineer, Lyle Lee. I would put the beats together and he'd be like, Long, what the hell are you doing? That's all out of pitch. I was like, I don't know. I'm just putting the tempos together. It sounds good to me. So he was the one that would be like, no, that's out of pitch. You got to do this and you got to do that. So he taught me a lot as far as what to put together too after the fact. But at the time, it sounded good to me. I liked the tempo and the energy. And that's really how that beat came together. But the Mr. Ron Carter piece was the icing on the cake.
Engine number 9 on the New York Transit line. If my train goes off the track, pick it up. Back come on the scene. Crispy.
That measure was like, wow. I fell in love with that measure, with the vocal under it, with the guitar riff in there. And that's how it came together. It's just putting a bunch of samples together and see what worked.
And in terms of finding that measure, in a case of something like that, would you listen to the whole Trident album looking for a measure?
Okay, so with a record, being a DJ, if you look at a vinyl record, you'll see some grooves are darker than the other grooves. And that just points to a solo of some sort. Because a lot of the vinyl lines are very tight, and then you see, you know, darker lines, which means more space. Not so much was going on. That was called the break. And that's how DJs searched for beats or bass solos or anything else. It was usually in the beginning, in the end, or somewhere in the middle was the break. And that's how I found Mr. Carter's piece, by playing the dark grooves on the record. Of course, after the fact, I went back and listened to the whole record to see if anything else I could grab.
Which matched his complexion.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep it dark.
Drez, you want to talk more about that second version and the experience of making it and the impact of it?
I remember when I first heard the track that Long put together for the remix of Choice Is Yours. I had never heard anything like it. And I was an astute student of hip hop. There's probably not much on planet hip hop that I hadn't heard. And I had never heard anything like this particular track. And the fact that it was ours, it was monumental to me because, like, I remember after lyrics were laid to the track and we mixed it, I remember standing next to Long and we're playing this song as loud as it possibly can be played in the studio and big speakers. And I just remember looking at him and, you know, like, just being like, I don't know what just happened, but we just did something.
Where's the black sheep? Here's the black sheep. Even if we wanted to, the clock cannot be weak.
Like, I don't know what's about to happen, but something's about to happen. You know, like, there was nothing that sounded like this up to this point in our music. And it was obvious from the first time people heard it that they were stuck, you know, and it quickly took a life of its own. And it's 30 years now of this song being reborn. Every 2-3 years, it gets a rebirth in something major. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I just seen it in the Spider-Verse with my kid, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like, we're looking at our names on the ending credits, mm-hmm. you know, and it's literally Mr. Long and Mr. Carter that I literally have to thank for, you know, the opportunity, you know what I'm saying, to write something, to, you know, to sit next to my kid and share something organic 30 years later.
Mm-hmm. So, Ron, do you remember hearing this record, or how aware are you of the record using the part of your solo?
My sons, who were really involved in music with a big M, you know, a capital M, they listened to all kinds of music, you know, and I think one of them heard it on radio and said that I know that I made a record with some group called Black Sheep. You know, I said, no, I don't know anybody like that. You know, I'm... They said, well, you should kind of go out and buy this record or pay attention to the radio next time because they're playing a track that I know it's you. I don't know who else plays like that.
Here they come, yo. Here they come. Here they come, yo.
I don't know what record they sampled. I don't know how old the sample is, but I know that there's no bass player dad who plays that kind of stuff but you. So whoever they are, wherever they're from, that they got a good taste in bass players, if nothing else. So you got to call and find out what's happening with that, as it turns out. So I went to the store, actually, and bought the record because I didn't know. I was busy. I was teaching school full time. I was making gigs. I just didn't have that kind of set-aside time to do that kind of research, you know? And when I heard the record, I thought two things right away. First of all, how many other bass players tried for that spot? And how many bass players have they heard in the... How have they picked that person, me in this case? What was the driving factor that made my line that's isolated from a record fit what they were going to do, you know? And my son said, Dad, don't worry about that. You're on the record. People are going to hear who don't know who you are. They will know who you are at some point because, okay, you're right, Ron, you're right, Miles, but the story issue is still what made this record so important of all their choices to solve their needs. I'm sure they listen to a lot of records, whoever these guys are, RJ, they listen to a lot of choices. I'm like a scientist, man. How many choices did they hear before they decided this is the right boy right here? And what made that right person sound? I fit the lyrics so well that they couldn't do without it because it's all over the fucking record. and of course, they couldn't answer. They just listened to everybody else, you know? And here I am. So I'll ask you his question. I'll ask the question, how many records did you hear before you picked that one? And why was the sound of that record so important to what you were saying?
Myself, I'm not a musician, but when I heard the piece, the way it was being played, I thought it was amazing, especially the way it fit with the drums. So when it came together, that was the deciding factor, how great it locked with the beat. Because I listened to tons of bass. I listened to a lot of different bass solos, and they were all boring.
I'm kind of speaking for the jazz community right now in that whenever we make a record, we always hope that someone other than this exclusive guys who are making the record, at some point it crosses their path. Or at some point someone has heard it and recommends that they hear this band, these guys play live because that record excited them. We have no way of controlling that when we play. Like you said, when we finished the record, the McCoy record, it was in the air for me. I had no idea the titles of the tunes. All I know is I had a great time learning how to play with McCoy. And learn how to play a lesson. I thought I had a free lesson from these two guys. And I'd like to feel that when they left, they understood a bass player's role even more explicitly because I was not stepping back from either one of these two giants. Right. When the record was done, we felt that we had done a great job in a very small space of time under a time pressure, knowing that we had only one day to make this record. In this small time from 9 to 5 or whatever it turned out to be, we basically knew there'd be no overdubs, there'd be no splicing, basically, you know? We knew that what we played, it was as pure and as one time only as it could possibly be. And we understood that going in. So what you finally heard, whatever was left for the audience to hear, was as pure as you could get if it were a live nightclub date, and it was just right to your ears. We all hope that someone picks out something that catches their ear that we played accidentally, but on purpose. Now, that riff you played, I've been playing that for a long time. I just never knew where it's going to fit. Now, we all have these ideas roaming around like you guys do. And we use I'm personalizing it now. I try to find, what's the best place to play this figure I'm still hearing that it seems to work somewhere? And what's going to be the result of when I play this? Is it going to stop the guys in their tracks saying, man, how the fuck did you do that? Will someone applaud in the wrong place because it looks good to them? Will make the band think differently about the next player who comes in there for a solo or my next solo? All these factors play into ultimately what you decided to use for your disc because it was important to make that space work.
Engine number 9 on the New York Transit line. If my train goes...
When I finally heard that, I wished I had done it in a different key because that syndrome, my key was a little dark for the voice. I thought if I had a choice to play that line, I would have played it down a minor third.
Yo, you're blowing my mind, man.
Because I knew it had something to do with a verse, a lyric, some words.
So besides being sampled for Black Sheep's The Choice Is Yours, Ron Carter has been on a whole bunch of other hip-hop records where his bass part was sampled. But in one case, he was actually invited to come and play on the record when it was being made, and that was on A Tribe Called Quest's Low End Theory, one of the all-time great hip-hop albums and a really great example of a jazz and hip-hop blend. And he was invited by Q-Tip from A Tribe Called Quest to play on verses from The Abstract.
Yeah, and this one goes out to my man, thanks a lot, Ron Carter, on the bass. Yes, my man Ron Carter is on the bass, and check it out.
One of the reasons for me that the Q-Tip thing was effective, I was there when they made the words up, and I told them what I wasn't going to accept, you know? I said, Q-Tip, my generation, I'm not those language skills you guys use. Brother Ron, my car's parked outside, but the key is still in the ignition, and I'm not too far from that word that says exit. I want to do this job, because I told my son something I wanted to do it. So I had a chance to hear the lyric before I based my note range on something that would complement the tenor of this guy's voice.
Right.
I would love to have had a chance to do another record like yours, but I'd pick a different key, because I think I could find more to do in a different range now that I know that I'm accompanying this verbal presentation. As it turned out, my guess is that if I was still in that frame of reference and that those notes you picked, those are great notes for me to play for ultimately fit the tenor of the verse. But I would have, if I'd known you were going to do it, I would have lowered it to a third because I thought that I could do more on the bass. Not your voice is changing. I could do more if I picked a different key that wasn't so fucking hard. But when you're playing off the top of your head and you're excited, everything works, man. Wow. And you don't worry about the consequences until you're in your car going and paying the toll going across the bridge. I said, man, I should have done that. I should have waited. I should have. You know, yeah, right. That's what makes tomorrow even better for us. Because we have one more chance to fix that shit.
Yeah.
And wonderful players always try to do that.
Mr. Carter, sincerely, like just listening to you speak, I'm blown away, number one. To hear your stories about how you just would just do the song and didn't even know what version was coming out or the title or even the cover or like that's amazing to me, you know what I'm saying? Because I mean, like, you know, I've been record shopping with Long and on my own over the years, and you know, like, we looked at you dudes like, man, we studied you guys, like, for Long to have pulled that snippet just speaks so much to the amount of time that we spent listening to you guys. And you guys are, man, like, you guys are just beyond genius, man. I totally, totally am grateful to be here with you.
Wow. Ron, can you hear us? I'm just making sure you can hear us.
Yeah, that's the sound of being stunned. Don't worry about it. Having said that, Driz, you live closer to New York than Mr. does. You can get here sooner.
I could be there in 20 minutes.
Well, I haven't had dinner yet. The plate's still cold. Come on in.
Oh, man. Thank you. I mean, thank you very much. I'm definitely going to take you up on that.
Okay, now he heard you now. Mr. Steve heard you say that. He's going to ask me, hey, Ron, did those guys call you back? No, they didn't call me back. Okay.
Hey, well, you might be like, yeah, they're here.
They won't leave.
I have a very nice kitchen. Don't worry about it.
Oh, man. I definitely see us recording something at some point. That would be insane, the three of us get together.
I've gotten better then. I've gotten better since then, man. That's 1975. I've gotten better.
I think we have too.
Okay, let's step into that hole together then.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
That brings us to the end of this episode of Evolutions Per Minute and the story of how Ron Carter's bass line from Impressions became the basis of Black Sheep's The Choice Is Yours Revisited. To keep up with the guests on this episode, you can check out Ron Carter on his website, roncarterjazz.com, or on Instagram at roncarterbassist. You can follow Drez from Black Sheep on Instagram at blacksheepdrez, D-R-E-S, and Mr. Long at longblacksheep, L-A-W-N-G-E. You've been listening to Evolutions Per Minute. I'm your host, Dan Seif. Tune in for more episodes of this podcast, and don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Evolutions Per Minute is produced by Stephen Ray, Christian Brun, DJ Khalil, and Autovita Studios, and edited by Sean Hettner. If you like this podcast, you can hear me every week on my radio show, Excursions Radio, on KJazz 88.1 FM in Los Angeles, where I play hip-hop and jazz. You can also stream the show anywhere in the world at kkjz.org. You can follow this podcast on Instagram at Evolutions Per Minute, and you can follow me on Instagram at Chief Seif.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.